Good evening, everybody. This is Tom Murch Jr., and welcome to Bantering the Blue Shirts. I'm joined currently by Beth. How's it going, Beth?
It's going okay.
And I'm also joined by Shayna. How's it going, Shayna?
Going good.
So we're joining you tonight. It is a Wednesday. The Rangers play tomorrow night, and we wanted to get in a podcast before the trade deadline. Things sort of got underway with the trade of Nick Holden, so that's a start. So we're going to talk about a couple of different things tonight, but we will start with the Nick Holden trade, and we will start with Shayna. So Shayna, what are your thoughts on the Nick Holden trade? Do you like it? Do you love it? What are your thoughts?
I like it a lot. I think that they got more than what they paid for, which was important. And I think they got something that'll actually help them in pick more than anything else. And I think that if we see McDonough for the rest of the season, maybe we'll actually see McDonough with like a different partner, or maybe just with Mark Stahl. But I think it opens up a lot of opportunities because they kind of had a problem with the fact that he was a left-handed defenseman that played on his right, which is already a disadvantage, and then on the first pair, which is a bigger disadvantage, and in the moment, which made it even worse. So we don't have that, so that's all good. And they got something for it, so I can't complain. Boston got themselves a shutdown guy that plays on the power play, so they can enjoy that.
I mean, I think it was interesting. It was a situation where they acquired Holden from Colorado for a fourth-round pick. They have him for a full season, and then obviously the up to the 60-game mark this year, and they get a third-round pick and a body back, and hit Rob O'Gara, who is supposed to be in the lineup tomorrow night. And the corresponding move was sending Ryan Sproul back to the Hartford Wolfpack. They needed some bodies back given the amount of recalls the Rangers have made lately. Beth, do you have any opinions on the Nick Holden trade?
I mean, it's funny. I've been thinking about it. And, you know, I guess it's one of those how soon they forget things. But, you know, I'm really just imagining how we'd feel about him if he'd been used correctly. And if he would have been one of those guys, just, you know, if he'd been third pair on his right, whatever his right side is, and, you know, the right minutes, not thrown out in the last minute of a playoff game, you know. And I'm thinking of, you know, aside from screening Lundqvist and some unspeakable turnovers, he did have these sort of hilariously wonderful moments on offense sometimes. You never really knew. And I kind of wonder, I feel like, not that the guy was here long enough to have any sort of legacy, of course, the right word. But, you know, I do wonder, you know, if he'd been deployed correctly, like according to his ability, which sounds kind of Marxist all of a sudden, but yeah, you know, if he'd been used right for what he could actually do and for what he could actually contribute, you know, would we be, I mean, I guess we'd still be glad to see him go. Cause I guess he came in for a fourth and we're getting a third for him now. So that, you know, that works out pretty well, but you know, I do feel like his time here was sort of spoiled by the fact that he was consistently being asked to do things that he really couldn't do. And that burden sort of, you know, fell on him, and it sort of fell on our perception of him too. Whereas whatever, you know, whatever he was bringing to the table was sort of overshadowed, I think, by the completely, I think, unreal expectations for him and the way he was used. So yeah, bye-bye. Not sorry to see him go. But I do feel like his usage was almost as much of a problem, if not more of a problem, than his actual talent or lack thereof. And since AV's still here, even though Holden isn't, you know, it's going to sort of keep coloring things until we know something different.
Here's what I'll say about Nick Holden. And I feel that he is a player that there were a lot of opinions on. And by a lot of opinions, I mean whenever someone would complain about Nick Holden, for example, people would point to the fact that, well, he's being deployed on the top pair, he's being deployed on the second pair by Alain Vigneault, and this sort of concept that he knows what he's doing. He had the whole backstory was when they made the trade and he's talking about it with the media saying, you know, I talked to Patrick Waugh, I'm getting one of his better defenders.
That's right.
And I think the complaints about Nick Holden were very specific. They were very targeted. He was, for lack, for better or for worse, an offensive-minded defender. He had a career year, his first year with the Rangers, 11 goals, 23 assists, 34 points, while averaging 20-37 a night, according to Hockey Reference. In a vacuum, those are not bad numbers. The problem was he was asked to do things, like you said, Beth, out of his wheelhouse. He was being used late in the games. We obviously saw that in the Montreal series, the Ottawa series, where the Ottawa series, it was more detrimental. But for me, I always was okay. I never complained about Nick Holden's offense. Now, granted, this year, 3 goals, 9 assists, 12 points is a far cry from what he was sort of doing. But I think that it'll be interesting to see how Boston uses him. I think that if they try to use him the same way that the Rangers did, they're going to be in for a nasty surprise. They're not going to like that. But as a third pairing guy, that maybe you give him some time on the power play, because as we've seen, in the right spot, when he sort of winds up, he can get his shot through traffic. And obviously the one thing that we will sort of, you know, always remember him for is being described as safe and dependable, which I think that phrasing sort of earned him more criticism because it was just sort of a blatant sort of, slap in the face, if you will, towards the fans. It was like, oh, this guy is safe and dependable. You don't know what you're talking about. But good on the Rangers for getting a third-round pick and a body back. It's a situation where the investment originally was sort of they anteed up and they got a better return. Maybe you say to yourself, they wait a little more. The other players on the market sort of go. Does he maybe draw a second? That I don't think was ever realistic. But I think that you sort of, you know, take the money and run and you sort of move forward. And that's sort of where I want to go next, because the trade deadline is Monday and it's a situation where we obviously know that Rick Nash is likely going. Michael Grabner is likely going. But I want to change gears, because shortly before we got on for the show, Darren Dreger sent out a tweet, and I'll say, you know, take this with a grain of salt, especially because it's considering the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Dreger's sort of connection to the Maple Leafs has waned in recent years, because his cousin is Dave Nonis, who was the former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So it was a situation where whenever there was something that wanted to be leaked or sort of strategically spun, Dreger was the man that could sort of carry the water for his cousin. But he said, as I said on SportsCenter, I believe the Leafs' interest is targeted on Ryan McDonagh. Not saying they get him, but still in on the fun. And that's really saying a lot without actually saying anything. We do know that Ryan McDonagh did submit his list of teams that he would play for. It's a according, I believe it was Pierre LeBrun saying that the list was not prohibitive. So there's some options there. So I'll pose the question to Shayna. Given everything that we've heard, given everything that we know, do you think there's a chance that Ryan McDonagh is actually going to move, or is he going to be a member of the Rangers at 302 next Monday?
I have no idea what they're going to do with him. I think the two players that aren't rentals are obviously McDonough and Zuccarello, because they get him for a year and a half. And Zuccarello is the one I think at least stays until draft day. But with McDonough, I just don't know. The fact that he hasn't been back in the lineup tells me maybe they do want to move him. Although, they want to move him sooner, I should say. I think it sucks that that Bruins game could be his last one as a Ranger. But I know it only takes... I know Cap Friendly posted this. It's a little over $1 million in cap space to acquire him with this contract, and that's if the Rangers don't retain any salary, which they definitely could do. So it's not like it'll be too tough on a team like the Maple Leafs to actually acquire him. I just don't know. I don't know if it takes them a step forward to make that trade right now, because they have. I know they need a defenseman right now, but if it comes down to moving someone, like everyone said, their three pillars are the ones that you would hear the most to get someone like McDonough. So let's say it's a Marner and Nylander, and it's obviously reaching for the stars for the Rangers, getting, you know, talent like that back in return, just because they are so important to the Maple Leafs. I think it's going to be tough to take one of them away and say, here's a defenseman, and just like leave it alone for the Leafs. Like, how do they replace what they lost then on offense? And I don't know if they can afford it right now that he would be on the move there yet, but maybe at the end of the year when they look at their cap situation with the Nylander extension, because if they actually do need a defenseman long term, they kind of can't afford to sign someone like Carlson or McDonough and still sign Matthews, Marner, and Nylander to a long term extension after that. So I think something does have to give with their cap space. I'm just not sure they're willing to give up this playoff run, give a player up for the playoff run. What do you guys think?
My oracle of calamitiesness is saying McDonough goes. I'm not quite sure why. And I know Joe's been screaming about getting Nylander for anyone who will listen for I don't know how long now. But yeah, that doesn't really make sense to the Leafs, though. It's sort of tidy for us, but not really for them. So yeah, I kind of agree that the logical part of me sees him staying, because they don't have a piece. If they want him for a run, they don't have a piece that they can really give up right now for his worth. But I don't know. There's just something about his injury and him not playing that makes me feel like he's definitely on the block somehow. And it's just going to be the right offer that they're waiting for. So, yeah, I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. Tom?
I think what's interesting is McDonough hasn't played, I think it's, what is it, the last six or seven games that he's sat out, but without the exact amount. He's not been playing. What we do know is that throughout the year, he's had a lot of maintenance days. And to me, that says he was playing with some sort of nagging injury. If he's someone that the Rangers are going to consider trading, they're obviously going to try to get him as healthy as possible. But I believe there was a report that teams that were interested in him were not sort of discouraged by the fact that he was currently sitting out. So it's not like whatever is ailing him is something that is going to impact him long term. I believe that the teams that were reportedly interested in McDonough were the Bruins and the Lightning. But in the situation of the Bruins, they just added Nick Holden. Not that Nick Holden is obviously on any level as McDonough, but it's still, they were looking for a defenseman. They added a defenseman. Whether they want to do more, completely up in the air. The Tampa Bay situation is something that's interesting, because if you look at their roster, the idea, at least the one that was said by Steve Yzerman, is any move they make is going to make them better. They're not going to make any lateral moves. So by that, a lateral move would be moving someone that's currently on their roster for McDonough. So you ask yourself, do the Lightning have enough of futures plus draft picks that you would feel comfortable in trading for McDonough. I don't know. It's a situation where I feel that ultimately you wait until the draft, but the only downside of that is that if you wait to move McDonough, then the team acquiring him only has him for a year. There's something to be said of acquiring him for this run and all of next season, pretty much exactly what the Rangers did when they traded for Keith Yandel. I think that it might be a situation where we get to deadline day, we sort of see the moves that are being made. Another interesting wrinkle is the Erik Karlsson situation. Erik Karlsson is someone that the Senators are reportedly taking calls on. It's a whole mess of a situation. They apparently want Bobby Ryan to be a part of the deal. So not only are they getting rid of their franchise player in Karlsson, but they're going to strap on all this dead weight, so to speak, in Bobby Ryan. Not that he's not an okay player, but I believe his contract is, let's see, I think it's over $7 million, but I'm going to go to Cap Friendly to look up the specifics. But either way.
How's his foot? Has that been like a lasting thing? I thought I heard somewhere that that was sort of lingering, or is he like all primed up and good to go now? Nothing lingering.
What, Bobby Ryan?
Karlsson. No, Karlsson.
I don't think I'm sure he's not 1,000%, but it's not like that's even been a topic of conversation as much. I think everything else is just the Senators shitstorm as is. And you were asking for his cap hit, right, Tom?
Yeah, I think it's 7.25. Oh, Bobby Ryan.
Karlsson's right now is still Bobby Ryan.
Yeah,
oh,
because they want to.
I think you're right.
So yeah, so he.
7.25. I think you're right, and it's really long. It goes to like, I don't know, 2021 or 2022 or something. That's not a bad contract.
2022. So that's really a like a poison pill contract, so to speak. That you're kind of you're devaluing Karlsson, but I guess they're valuing the fact that if they can get rid of that weight, it's a situation where Ottawa makes the FNUF for Gabrick trade, where they can just buy Gabrick out and save money. But to avoid going down a tangent involving the financial whimsicalness of the Ottawa Senators, if I were to place odds on it, I would say that McDonough will be a member of the Rangers past the deadline. I think that right now the market is in a sort of a stall because you don't really have a player like him that's been traded yet. So you don't have an idea of what value is. And I think the Rangers' prerogative would be to hold on to him and wait for the right deal. And maybe they see where their lot falls at the end of the year in terms of the draft lottery. Maybe they look at it as a situation where there's a team that really needs a defenseman and they have a first-round pick that would be of value to them as they look to sort of bundle things. But it's definitely something that I think is going to become more of a topic until the deadline passes. And then once the deadline passes, it will sort of die down. Moving on. Shayna made mention to them, Rick Nash, Michael Grabner. Michael Grabner was someone that was, I believe, previously linked to the Los Angeles Kings. They were looking for, I believe it was middle six scoring. But it's a situation where the Kings made a trade with, I believe it was the Arizona Coyotes, and they picked up Tobias Reeder. So that sort of would be their middle six option. On TSN last night, the Bob father, Bob McKenzie, sort of talked about where the situation was with Grabner. And originally he was a guy that they were hoping to get a first for. I think we all knew that that was sort of a pipe dream, but now it's moving down to potentially a second round pick and then something. In Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts, he mentioned that the Pittsburgh Penguins would be potentially interested in Michael Grabner, and maybe they part with Daniel Sprong, who is a point per game player in the NHL, right, or the AHL that is right now. And I think that would be a fantastic return. But Shayna, what do you think happens ultimately with Michael Grabner? Is he staying in the East Coast? Is he going to the West Coast? Does it really not matter?
I hate the idea of anyone going to Pittsburgh. Like, I hear him
going to
Pittsburgh, and I can, like, swallow that, but when I hear Derek Brassard, the Pittsburgh stuff, I'm like, no, you can't do that. Like, please don't. It doesn't even make sense to them.
You're totally taking my response. Yep.
I don't get how Pittsburgh is like, we want a player, and then they just get them. It's like, have you have anything left? How have you, like, I don't understand them. I hear, like, oh, they might want Matt Cullen back, and it's like, that one I see how you can get. But anyone else, I don't understand how they have anything left. But apparently they do. They have prospects, and they have some picks. Not all of them in the next couple of years, but some. But I don't see the Rangers doing anything to help the Penguins, even if it is for this year, because I just don't – I think they would have to make it worth their while even more than a regular team would, because it's within the division. And I saw something about the Flames, and I think that's kind of interesting because he's good at scoring and their bottom six is not good at all. But I think with Nash, I see him coming back, and with Grabner, I just don't see how they afford it. And the player that comes to my head, I'm like, he's going to get that Benoit Pouliot contract, that what was it, 4 years, $5 million a year, I think it was, after his Rangers deal, and it was ridiculous, and I see why he accepted it, and of course, but I don't know why anyone offered him that, and I feel like Grabner's going to get that kind of deal, and I'm like, I like you, Grabner, I think you're a great part of this team, but you're 30 years old, I wouldn't want to sign you for more than 2 years unless you're going to make, like, $2.5 million a year. If the Rangers are somehow, like, we'll sign you for 4 years, $2.5 million, which might be a little bit much, I'd be like, you know what, that works. Otherwise, no. 2 years, $3 million a year, I feel like would be, like, top of the limits for me. So I think they need to make sure the return is good on him, because I don't think he's just a, you know, he might just be a rental for them, but it's not like Nash where it's like, you're getting him for a little and then we're going to take him back. So I think they really need to make sure they get whatever back. And all the team needs to get him is, like, $400,000 in cap space. Like, it's not even much. With Nash, it's, like, 1.7 or 1.8. So it's so reasonable for them.
So with Grabner, I would say I think there is a good chance that he ends up back with the Rangers, regardless of where they trade him. Not any big sources or anything, but a friend of a friend of a friend was – I was having a conversation with this, and apparently it's a situation where Grabner's kids, you know, go to school in the city. They sort of like it there. His wife works in the city. They sort of, you know, like the way that things are. Obviously, he spent all that time with the Islanders, so they're sort of set up in New York. So – I think it would be a situation where they may not want to move. Obviously, money can change a lot of things. But I would I'll direct this question to Mike. Mike, what do you think is ultimately going to happen with Michael Grabner?
Mike!
Well,
hi,
I'm
Mike.
Going to pretend that I didn't lose track of time and that I've heard everything
the whole time.
I'm going to pretend I've heard everything you guys
right
said
here.
And that I wasn't wrapped up writing something about USA-Canada women's gold medal game tonight.
Everyone should be watching. Don't forget.
Here's what I know about Michael Grabner. He's got a lot of tattoos. he's Austrian. I feel like if I saw him wearing a leather jacket and a beanie that's pulled down a little too far, you know what I mean? When people wear a beanie, like, right, so it's right on top of their eyebrow line, and they look a little intimidating. I feel like if I saw
I
him wearing that,
like that,
yeah, I'd be intimidated. That's what I think about him. In regards to trading him, or whether or not he comes back as a Ranger is the question.
So I would say the question is, where do you think he ends up at the trade deadline? Do you think he's staying within the Eastern Conference? Do you staying in within the West? Do you think that it's a situation where teams may realize that he may end up returning to the Rangers, so their level of investment may be a little lower? In other words, they won't get suckered into a bidding war for no reason. So if, say, Team A really wants Michael Grabner, Team B is going to go, well, I would like Michael Grabner on my team, but he may only be a temporary rental, and I don't have any intention of re-signing him, so I'll just let Team A get him.
I get the feeling, I know Pittsburgh's been said, I get the feeling it will be an East Coast team, if for no other reason, because, you know, he's been in the East Coast, you know, the Eastern Conference for a long time now. And I feel like a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference have a better idea of what he can do. The bottom line is, I think every team that's a cup contender wants someone like Grabner, because what he represents is scoring depth, speed, a guy who can help your penalty kill. I mean, he checks off a lot of boxes, and that's why he is so exciting. And, you know, he's not as big of a name as Nash, so he won't demand the same sort of package, but he fits into a lot of pieces, you know, a lot of places, I should say. He's like that when you're playing Tetris and you're setting it up for that one really long piece that you're working towards, that's what Michael Grabner is. He's the really long piece.
That's like really, really like excellent analysis, and I don't think I've ever heard anything so perfect.
Well, you know, I've been listening to the show the whole time, so I'm right on top of this.
Very true. I agree. Perfection. I don't really know where we can go from there.
Who do you guys think is the most tattooed Ranger ever? I'm just going to throw the whole show off the rails.
Ever?
Yeah.
I mean,
just surface area, like.
Grabner's got to be up there. He has a lot. He always posts like on like, you'll see those like shirtless pictures, and it's like, we see you.
Yeah, he's got the sleeves and everything, right? And the
chest piece.
Yeah.
Tenko had a couple tattoos. He had the two Stanley Cup tattoos, and then I think he had a couple other ones. But I'm trying to think, at least in recent times. I mean, in recent years, you have a lot of like baby Rangers, if you think about it. So I'm trying to think of the grizzled older vet players that would get a tattoo. That's kind of hard.
Or a young guy who would get a tattoo like Austin Matthews did. Doesn't he have like
he
a lion
tattoo
over his entire body? He got an epic tattoo that, yeah, like tattoo, like, whoa, like tattoo. You can look it up. It's
I'm looking it up right
I'm
now.
I'm sure you
I
are.
I'm
like
looking
Grabner
it up right now.
Has to be up there.
See, these are the things that I know.
Yeah, I remember
that.
When you said lion, I'm thinking like Ed Sheeran's chest, and I'm like, that definitely was Ed Sheeran, not Austin Matthews. Okay, I remember this.
Isn't it a lion?
Yeah.
It's a lion with a crown on it.
He got the lion sleeve. Interesting.
Which, you know what? I don't really believe. I'm not sure that lions as a society have reached the Iron Age where they can work with metals in a forge. So I'm going to call this tattoo bogus.
Well, maybe the lion stole the crown.
Speaking of Toronto, Tom, do you think the Rangers are going to make a trade with the Leafs?
Mike, you were listening the whole time. We just need your opinion on that.
Oh, of course. God damn it. Goddamn son of a bitch. I think I feel like McDonough is a really good fit in Toronto. I know it's something we've talked about before. The reason I feel like he's a fit there is because McDonough isn't just a rental. And I feel like he's a guy who a team can be willing to say, we're going to have you for two seasons, or rather, you know, a season and a quarter and two playoff runs, and then possibly negotiate a long-term contract with you. I'm really tempted by that. I know there's also the talk about Tampa, and I've heard some rumblings about Tampa giving up Sergachev. I don't see why they would do that. It doesn't really strike me as the right thing to do. However, it would make me immeasurably happy if the Rangers turned a former Montreal elite defenseman prospect into another former Montreal defensive prospect in Sergachev. If the Rangers can find a way to do that, it would make me immeasurably happy. But yeah,
until
I mean, I've heard everything
run
else.
Run him into the ground too. Don't forget, you need the next part of the story. The Rangers ruin everything.
Yeah. I'm trying to bring happiness and joy into the show, Shayna.
Well,
I think Sergachev
is good.
It would be some level of Shakespearean tragedy for Ryan McDonagh to end up with the Tampa Bay Lightning and find himself paired with Dan Girardi once again, while Anton Strahlman's just sort of sitting there and looking like, really? Really? We're going to go through this shit again?
They could totally go with they did Sergachev Girardi a little bit, and I don't know why they didn't do it more, because it was actually pretty okay. And then some injury screwed that up. I know when Hedman was hurt, I don't remember if they ended up going with it. I don't remember if they bumped Strahlman up and then were like, hey, we can do it this way, whatever it was. But Girardi's actually pretty good with Sergachev. And if they want to do that more and make that their third pair, which I don't know if you want to make Sergachev a third pair defenseman, come to think of it. But in theory, if they did, and then they were like, hey, McDonagh Strahlman has a second pair, then Tampa would just exceed the Rangers in every way that is not Henrik Lundqvist. And I would be so happy for them, but I would be so sad for us.
Here's what I'll say about Sergachev. He's a very talented player, and I sort of have this fear if AV is the coach past this season, because it just seems that offensive-minded defensemen just don't survive in this city. It seems that it's unfortunate, because you have a subset of fans that are like, no one will ever be as good as Brian Leetch, whether it was Yandel, whether it was Tom Pody, whether it was Michael Roosevelt, guys that had pretty solid offensive seasons for, you know, relative to when they were playing. And it was, oh, nope, you know, they're too risk-taking. They're defensemen. They have to play defense. They're not offensemen.
They're not from Texas.
And I could just see Sergachev being like, oh, you know, he's really good at pushing the play, but he's weak in his own end. And, you know, that therefore he's got to stay on the third pairing. I mean, similar to how, you know, Shattenkirk can't be trusted in his own zone sort of mindset. You know, granted, he was playing on one leg for the most part, but that's another discussion for another day.
It's such crap, that whole idea, though. They're like, oh, if someone's offensive, they're a liability. And it's like, no, and nobody said that. Nobody, like, when L.A. won the cup, both cups, you know, it was like, oh, they slowed down the game. But after that, it was like a speed and skill game, and no one talked about it. I mean, like, any team, you could look around and try to find someone that's offensive, and it's like, look at their numbers and tell me if every single time they're the worst player. Like, and I know people bring up, like, Adam Clendenning as an example with the Rangers, and it's like, nobody claimed he was, like, the end-all, be-all. It was just he was, like, better than, you know, what was available. But when you go down, you go, Yandel or Shattenkirk or any of them, like, please tell me how they were the worst. And if you want to say, you know, oh, he didn't dig the puck out in the corners and crap like that. I know that was a complaint about Dougie Hamilton. They were like, I remember when he was traded, there were so many fans that were like, oh, he's not good in his own zone and he'll never turn his back to the play and blah, blah, blah. He's too scared to do that. And it was like, he is so good. You need to look past your own nose and get into 2018 or whatever year it is at the time and look at other defensemen around the league. It's so dumb that there's still people that feel that way about offensive defensemen.
So I want to ask a question, but I want to get Beth's permission first, because it is a math question. Beth, may I ask a basic, and I mean basic in the most basic sense of the word, math question?
Sure, I'll allow it.
Okay, thank you. Let the record show that the question was granted. How much is a goal worth?
What?
How much is a goal worth? So a goal four is equal to the number.
I love you, Beth.
So if you score a goal, it's 0-0. It becomes 1-0. So it's plus one.
Yes.
So if
how many monies is a goal worth, Tom?
No. Just like a basic unit. So it's a goal is worth one. My point is this: if you score a goal or you prevent a goal, it's a factor of one. But the offensive defensemen are criticized for their defensive shortcomings, even though what they do is generate goals. So I guess I didn't do a good enough job explaining it. It's stupid that a goal four is not valued as much or as a goal prevented. So it's this sort of concept that, well, defensemen have to defend, but they're providing offense, and I think that should be just as valuable. You're not going to have a whole league of defenders that just snow angel or drop down and block shots. You're going to have your Eric Carlsons, you're going to have your Brent Burns, your Drew Doughties, your Kevin Shattenkirks. Yes, they're going to turn the puck over. Yes, they're going to make ill-advised pinches, but my evaluation of defenders is looking at things from an end-of-the-day perspective. Are they helping me more than they're hurting me? Yes, they are sort of giving up chances, but are they generating more than that? And I guess I'll never figure that out. I guess it sort of comes from the mindset of what a defenseman is supposed to be, but I never understand that.
It feels like you're talking more about the underappreciation or perhaps like misdiagnosis of what's wrong or the troubles involved with an offensive defenseman. And
yeah,
I think in the modern game where there's no more two-line pass, a defenseman who can move the puck is really, really essential. You need at least two or three guys on your blue line who can do it, and it's great to have at least one guy who's exceptional at it. And, you know, it's really simple math. Brent Burns has led the league in, I think, turnovers the last, you know, couple of years, and Carlson was right up there with him. Guys who everyone recognizes as these guys are unbelievably good. Every team wants them. They turn the puck over all the time, and that's because they have the puck all the time. And it's just part of the deal. But, you know, I think it's really easy to criticize offensive D because when they're not scoring, you notice all the holes in their game. You notice the turnovers. You notice them, you know, making a pinch maybe when they shouldn't have. But, you know, what we normally hear about analyzing and evaluating defensemen is like, oh, if you don't notice them, then they're doing their job right. And that doesn't at all apply to offensive defensemen.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. It doesn't even apply to defensive defensemen, though.
No, I think it's a waste of a man on the ice, frankly. Yeah.
You can use the same for an offense defenseman or a defensive defenseman, and it's like the same people that would say, like, John Klingberg's not in, like, Norris contention. Like, he contributes to the offense more. His goal differential is positive. I'm pretty sure it's still the best on defense. So is his, you know, Corsi differential. He's the most offensive of their defensemen. You can look at Calgary. I think it's Hamilton leads in goal differential. And in shot attempt differential, I think he's second to Giordano. You can look at any of those numbers and go, oh, okay, but it you still notice it. Like, do you notice Jacob Slavin is so good defensively, even though he, you know, doesn't hit much? It's all about, like, evolving, and there are so many fans that don't evolve with the game, and they're the ones that probably think plus minus is like the most indicative stat about a defenseman too. And it's just, you could take a step forward and view them differently and just try to be open-minded about them and realize, like, okay, like, Keith Yandel's a good defenseman. He would have been good for the Rangers. But no.
It's interesting how many people love plus-minus and then will sort of crap on, you know, advanced metrics where
especially
they're like,
goal
differential.
Literally use goal differential. What's wrong with that? Like, just 5-on-5. Everyone says just stick with 5-on-5 because it takes out everything else. Just focus in on it. That it balances the playing field. If someone you think is a great, you know, great plus minus player, they should probably be great in terms of goal differential too.
Yeah, I know this was a debate that's sort of been brought up recently. It was with Taylor Hall because he was asked about, you know, what it's going to be like to be potentially going to the playoffs. And then there were a bunch of Edmonton Oilers writers that were all butthurt because, you know, Taylor Hall was just this negative player. Look at his goal differential without looking at the fact that all of these empty net goals that he was on for and ignoring the what he generated while he was on the ice versus when he was off the ice. But, yeah, not to go into a tangent, I just feel that any trade the Rangers make, in this case, Mike brought up Sergachev, I think he's a tremendous player. I think he has an amazing skill set that is something that the Rangers really need more than ever, considering what it is that they're looking to do. But I just wonder if it's a situation where when they're looking at potential players and returns, are these players that Jeff Gorton is looking for? Are these players that Vigneault is whispering in the ear of Gorton? Which is actually a good question to ask you all, is who do you think is driving the bus in terms of negotiations? Is it a situation where Gorton might be saying, okay, Elaine, thanks for the input, and it's just saying, nope?
Maybe right now.
But this has to be Gorton's team at this point. I mean, all things considered, and the history of Sather's role and where Vigneault has taken this team, or rather where he hasn't taken this team since that first year, this has to be a shift in philosophy. It can't just be, hey, sorry, folks, we're going to get rid of some guys we know you all really love. It's going to be real tough. Sorry about when you bought all those jerseys, Dad. You know, there's got to be more to it than that. You have to acknowledge, like, all right, this path has not worked, and we need to make a shift in philosophy. And I think Gorton has he has the track record and the tools to make the right decisions here. This is his deadline to get right. And, you know, Vigneault should have next to no influence in what happens, because if the move forward is young players, and that's what the organization has said, he's not the right coach for that team. You know, that's just not the case anymore.
I agree with you. Sorry. I agree with you. I think we are quick to be like, oh, it must be Sather, because there's so many moves that they reek of something Sather would do. But the whole rebuild thing, I have to think that's a kick to Sather, because he got the Rangers in this mess. We're contemplating, well, not we, but they're contemplating moving Ryan McDonough, who's supposed to be their future, then, now, in the future, and whatever, because they did such a bad job with that Girardi extension and with the Stahl extension that they're paying for it now. They didn't keep Strawman. They traded futures time and time again, and everything else. Had they not signed Stepan to a bridge deal, he'd still be here. This wouldn't, you know, there would be no conversation about their center depth this year. It wouldn't be an issue. You have the issue of Hayes and Miller coming up now and everything else, and it's like, are you going to make the right moves with Shea? Are you going to repeat your mistakes? And I think that'll really show too. If Gorton somehow gets them all to cap-friendly deals, you know, like he did Zibanejad, it really shows that it's him, because that's something we never did get from Sather. But I think it took a while to get to that point. Once they said, we're rebuilding, all of a sudden you see everything change. I don't expect the coach to say anything besides, I'm going to help my team win. It's the same thing that Ted Nolan said in Buffalo, even though he lost. I remember they traded, you know, healthy players for injured players to get Evander Kane and absolutely decimated his roster at the deadline. But they still, it was the still same idea, whether it was teaching these young players fundamentals or anything else. McDonough finally is out of the lineup. They intended to give Lundqvist rest. It didn't happen because of other things, which whatever, he's getting the rest tomorrow. Fair enough. They're doing things and bringing these young defensemen up, and they're in the lineup. Whether, you know, when D'Angelo was recalled, it was, okay, Kanfer is out. Even before he was hurt, he's out for D'Angelo to play to give him a chance to see what he can do. So I think all of that you see is a lot more Gorton than anything else. Because at the beginning of the year, had things gone differently and maybe Smith been handled sooner and Shea not even, you know, taking a step back, and McDonough had the season that everyone expected him to, and every player to be used in the right way, and Buchnevich in the top six, I don't think they get to the point where they actually have to say, all right, guys, we're rebuilding because we're a mess. And they're at this point, so I have to think Gorton's like, okay, I need to handle this because it's on me if I don't. It's not on Sather, he has a job for life. It's not on Mignot. It's outright on me. So now I have to fix it and do it my way. And it seems like there's finally some agreements within that for the first time. But then again, he was also the guy that got McLeod like right before all this. So kind of drops my opinion of him.
So you're humming.
I can only think about the women's game. I'm not going to lie. That's
yeah,
all I can think about right now.
I'm excited.
Imagine how I feel. I mean, no, I wasn't writing something about that game and lost track of what time it was. Of course not. I wouldn't do that to our listeners.
It must be awesome.
That game that is on at 11 o'clock tonight that everyone should be watching and appreciating, especially since there's no other USA hockey to watch, so you have no other choice. There's no other hockey game at 11 o'clock to watch, except for that.
Tom, I know we wanted to switch over to landing spots for Nash as something to cover next. And I feel like I want to bring this up because we heard recently from Travis Yost that the Predators are not a likely landing spot for Nash all of a sudden. And that has me worried about a situation where I feel like the Rangers, you know, there's also been the connection between Nash and the Stars. And I bring that up because the Stars have Valeri Nichushkin. And I think it's a really bad idea to acquire Nichushkin in a deal. Dallas does have some other prospects and young guys, but there's something about Nichushkin that makes me really nervous. And I think that's for good reason, considering he's 23 years old and playing in the KHL right now. And he's already had, you know, some disagreements and contract negotiation stuff with Dallas. And this feels like something out of the Sather playbook would be to go after Nichushkin and make him one of the major parts of something like a Nash deal. It's highly unlikely the Rangers will be able to get something like, you know, Miro Heiskanen or something like that from Dallas, but you know, there's other pieces there, like Julius Honka is a little bit interesting, and, you know, getting a pick as well. So I wanted to know what you guys thought of if Nash isn't going to the Predators, where the hell is he going?
Wait, why are you thinking Nichushkin, if I'm saying it right, Mike?
There's been some rumblings. He's a guy, it's trading their rights, essentially. I know that I think it was a writer on Blucher Banner, I'm not going to name him by name, but I've already identified his gender, so that limits the pool, who said that Nichushkin would be an interesting get for the Rangers. And, you know, I don't know if this person's opinion has changed recently, but to me this just feels like this is a headache. You know, this is not something you want to inherit, especially... You know, it's not the same thing. It's apples and oranges, but you know, the D'Angelo headache and the Rangers being willing to take that on, and you know, just there's a lot more at stake here than just, you know, oh, we think we can fix this. You know, you have to get safe, solid prospects if you're not getting draft picks. And that's why I'm nervous about something like a deal with Dallas that involves Nichushkin in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I think the Nichushkin situation was more of a Lindy Ruff thing. Funny how, you know, we end up with Lindy Ruff and all the defensive issues that we've had, and they just sort of seem to vanish from the Dallas Stars, even though the roster is, for better or for worse, intact. But Nichushkin would be an interesting get. He would be a player that I think has a pretty high ceiling, but is there a guarantee that he comes back? Is there a guarantee that, you know, he wants to play in the NHL? Is there, there are so many questions where I think that the Rangers, if they're going to say only get a first and then they prioritize instead of say maybe a second, like a prospect and a roster player, I think it's going to be something that's a sure thing. A team that potentially is interesting is there the possibility that Rick Nash would want to go back to Columbus? Would there be the potential there? I mean, they have a number of interesting prospects. I think one that Adam threw around was Sonny Milano. But can you just imagine Rick Nash coming back, being a monster in the playoffs, and Columbus just swooning him all over again?
They'd have to stop booing him, and it would be even better if he did it with them, and then he was like, all right, I'm out. I'm going back to the Rangers.
Yep.
Oh, that would be so funny.
That would be such a tease. But I think Nash is, if not Nashville, and I understand that was the report by Travis Yost. I think going back, it was Elliot Friedman who had said that Nashville might be potentially interested, but their move may end up being bringing over Eli Tolvanen, who was, you know, Finland was eliminated in the Olympics, so he's a player that maybe he's their deadline acquisition, and it doesn't cost them anything. But Shayna, in terms of Rick Nash return,
Shayna,
do you prioritize draft picks? Do you prioritize prospects? Do you need a roster player? What does that return sort of look like?
I think the fact that Nash, and I hate that, like, we keep seeing him do this, but he keeps saying, like, I don't know if I'm wanted here and blah, blah, blah. It's in a way, it's like dispelling the notion that it's like, hey, he's just a rental. But, like, I hope that it's just, like, giving them the idea that he's not a rental, because as long as they think that, it's going to lower the price. And when you have Grabner, who you might not care if he's a rental or not, it's a different story. But any team that has, you know, the cap space for Nash doesn't cost much. I think it's $1.7 million. It's not like that's, you know, backbreaker or anything like that. But if they move Grabner first, that's going to dictate, you know, how much they get. And I think it also depends on Evander Kane and all of that. So there's just so many moving parts. And I think that the focus, though, if they can get draft picks from Darnay and all of that, and, you know, that's great. So just focus on getting a first rounder, because he's the only one that's going to get you that unless you move McDonough. I think that if you want more than that and you can get the third and fourth and fifth rounders from other players, you can say, I want a first rounder and then a prospect. And you'll have that balance, because it wouldn't hurt to have some prospects just go right to Hartford, or next year you have them for Hartford, whatever the case may be. But I'm not as intent on they must get a roster player. It's not like once Nash is gone, they can't fill the space. You're going to have Kreider returning so soon that it'll, you know, fill the void right in the lineup there. But, yeah, that can't be their focus. As much as I know they want a quick turnaround, and I think everyone does for Lundqvist's sake, you can't rush it and just automatically get all these roster players and assume everything's going to work out. Like, you need to build for now and in the future, or you're just screwing yourself again. What do you guys think?
It's it's really hard for me. I know we saw the Holden deal, and I feel like that was a step in the right direction. I mean, I listened to you guys talk about it already, but you know, there's still a potential for things to go really wrong here, and that's what makes me nervous, because if there's a way to drop the birthday cake on the floor before it gets to the eagerly awaiting child whose eyes are filled with hope, the Rangers can find a way to do it. It's kind of what they do. It's what they do with contracts. It's what they do in free agency. I mean, there's been a couple of really encouraging exceptions lately, but for the most part, the cake is on the floor, the kids are crying, and the goodie bags are never good enough. So I have a lot of trepidation about what happens next. I feel like, you know, there's going to be a big message sent by what happens specifically with McDonough, not only because he's the team's captain, but also because of what he represents in terms of value. I mean, on TSN's, you know, hockey trade bait list, you know, McDonough is in their top 15. He's ranked 14, but obviously that's pretty heavily influenced by the fact that he's not a pending UFA. With that being said, you know, Erik Karlsson is supposedly on the market, and there's Mike Green and Jack Johnson, but I think McDonough has a lot more teams interested, especially a team that's young like Toronto, that, you know, they feel like they could add a piece to their core and to be an answer, not just today, but in the future. I have so many concerns about how this rebuild gets executed. And, you know, the Holden deal was a good start. It's a warm body in the AHL and a third round pick, which is an improvement over for what the Rangers, you know, gave up for Colorado, just a fourth rounder. But yeah, there's too much potential for things to go squirrely before I feel confident about anything. I think we're going to learn a lot by what happens with the next big trade. I did specifically want to ask you to throw another monkey wrench into the show, to join the other 9 monkey wrenches I've supplied. Do you see Desjardins being worth anything to anyone?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Erik Fair got something. Yes, it was a 2020 pick. And
it was a seventh rounder, though.
I mean, sure, but I'm thinking Desjardins is a little bit more valuable. He was worth Brendan Davidson last year, and I know the expansion draft played into that. But Brendan Davidson's a solid defenseman, a young defenseman he was worth. And he's good in the playoffs. He just isn't good in his own zone. But if you are plugging him into a bottom six and you think that you have solid defensive players, like the Rangers having, you know, Frost and Grabner, when he's played with them, he looks fine. When he plays with everyone else, maybe not so much. But when he, you know, if you're like, hey, I can just slap you in and your line mates are going to be fine enough defensively that it's not a concern and you can bring a nice offensive punch, why the hell not? Here's a fifth round pick, even if it's in 2 years. It's a pick.
But what do you think is the best the Rangers can get for someone like Desjardins?
I think he can get like a fourth round pick. I think he
really
maybe, well, if you look at Desjardins this season, he's already out, I forget at one point it was, but he already has outpaced his offensive output from last season. So teams will look at that and say, eh, he's a guy that will give us some depth. He, you know, has a decent shooting percentage. And just historically speaking, I think that, like Shayna said, if Erik Fair could get a future pick, there's no reason why Desjardins can't grab something.
Yeah, but Erik Fair got like a lottery ticket for a lottery that might not exist. You know what I mean? It's that far away. And it's
but
kind
Desjardins
of that
has
irrelevant.
19 points at 5-on-5. That's pretty damn good for someone that doesn't get very good minutes and whatever. It's not bad.
Yeah, that's fair. I just feel like most of the teams that would be interested in something like offensive depth might be, you know, turned off by the fact that it's not just a size issue. It's when you're a one-dimensional center in this league, it's really hard for you to hold on to a job, especially if you're in a depth role. Like, you know, you have to be, like, outstanding offensively. You can't just be, like, you know, if you put him with some skill guys, he's going to make some things happen.
There aren't many other options, though. I don't think that, Matt Cullen might be on the move. Marco Castu, people might go after first because I don't think he has that same thing, you know. But
yeah, there's Plekanec, there's Letestu, there's Derek Ryan in Carolina.
Though, you're taking on, you know, a little bit more of Plekanec than I think you might want to. I mean, it's not like one done in Montreal might be like, hey, he's important to us. I don't like him. He wears turtlenecks.
I was going to make a turtleneck joke. I'm glad that you made it before me. I was going to say he'd have to go to a market where they have turtlenecks specifically made already.
Beth, what do you think? Are we going to keep Darnay? Yay.
Oh, the question is more, am I going to notice at this point, I think. I mean, I just sat here and, like, racked my brain for the last thing I had seen him. You know, like, when was the last time I noticed him, good or bad? And I was just kind of like, eh. I mean, I've missed a few games recently, but not that many. So, I mean, yeah, if we can get something for him, fine. Why not? I just, you know, nothing against the guy, but nothing, you know, he falls into whatever the category was that you were saying about the D player who should be, like, seen but not heard. I mean, I'm not sure that's true of anybody. There's only 5 people out there. Other than the gold, you know, I mean, do you really want somebody who you're not noticing at all? How does that work? So, yeah, I mean, again, nothing, I can't say anything necessarily bad about the guy. I think he's probably done what he has done what he was brought here to do, but I mean,
yeah, he only makes $1 million.
Happy to see him go. Only.
I mean, yeah, but for NHL players, I'm like, you look at it and it's like, you were supposed to be a 5-6 center. You're skilled. Was it Ottawa or Philly? Was one of those games I feel like he was on the ice for, like, every goal against, you look up and it's like, oh.
David Desharnais is the invisible man struggling to perfect a solution or a potion that will make him visible. He just kind of shows up every once in a while.
Him playing with Kreider and Booch for a little, it might have boosted his value because, you know, people are going to look at the surface. You know, surface numbers they see, and they're going to be like, oh, he scored all these points, look at that, and not realize, like, oh yeah, he was on the first line for a little bit, that's probably why, that definitely props him up, but, you know.
That's right, what are his face-off numbers? Season has been so weird.
Shayna, do you know his face-off numbers off the top of your head?
No. I know...
I'll find them in a hurry.
He plays
here.
Some of the most sheltered minutes, though. I know he gets, like,
55%
on
the draw. That's better than a turtleneck, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Someone will
It's all about the face-off.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, his possession numbers are, I mean, like, it's literally, like, everyone that, like, plays with him, I feel like you just see their numbers go right down. Like, goals for, I don't even think he's at 40%. And that's not saying that much for this team, but his is definitely one of the lower of the – of the offense, probably the whole team.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so long as he has really good wingers and the other team has fewer guys on the ice, he's quite a good hockey player.
Just get him good wingers. Like, someone, like, if someone wants, like, a Grabner, Darnay package deal, it's like, all right, Grabner's good defensively, and he likes someone who can pass to him. Here's Darnay. He can do it and play center. Now give us more things.
It's a package deal. 2-for-1 sale. Yeah.
I just want the Rangers to move him. I'm worried they won't, because there is this fun dilemma of, oh, we might not have enough warm bodies to play a team after the deadline.
Oh, bring up Niemies again.
Why isn't he here now? That's a whole other thing.
Wait, bring up who?
Boo.
Oh, Boo. I forgot about Boo, too. Hi, Boo.
He left.
Yeah, sure.
Holland replaced him. Yeah.
I don't have anything against Holland, but I'd rather have Boo.
I'd rather have Boo, too.
Yeah, but I don't know.
He's had his moments of being good.
Yeah, he's had his moments.
Yeah.
He made a really nice pass the other night.
But, like, that's just it. He's a fourth-line center that, like, doesn't get that many minutes. We shouldn't think much of him. So I guess that's a good thing. Darnay is the same thing, and we have, like, all these thoughts because it's like, well, he was supposed to be a healthy guy for a million games, and then he wasn't because of injuries, and then he went to the first line after that.
Yeah, but Darnay also has the baggage of being the guy who kind of, sort of, but not really replaced Stepan. And...
Oh,
that
no
is,
way.
That is
no one thinks that.
No,
yeah,
no
I,
way.
I never think
not
of
in his
like
role.
That.
Not in his role, but as in, like, you moved, you
I
know,
would
he's
say
the center that
Lindbergh.
Went on the team. Well, yeah, that's a
I
lot
would say
more
Lindbergh
accurate,
100%
think,
then, and even then I'd be like,
No, I agree with that. I just think that to some people the perception is he's the free agent center that came in after, the, you know, the Stepan deal. It's not saying that that's what he is. It's just saying that he has baggage to him. To me, I've, like, when the Rangers signed him, I said, okay, we'll see. And it was, I enjoyed the fact that there was someone shorter than Zuccarello on the team. I never thought we'd live to see the day. but I also knew exactly what the Rangers were getting. But I still feel like there has to be a team out there that says, you know, we want a 13th forward who's, you know, an offensive center that we can plug into the lineup to shake things up in the playoffs. And, you know, the reason I brought up what his faceoff numbers are is because there are enough teams that look at numbers like that and say, well, we need a faceoff guy. And I don't
Minnesota?
Think he's cool. Why not?
I just thought of it. Sorry, it just popped into my head. What about Minnesota? If they all of a sudden traded Matt Cullen, they'd probably get more in return for Cullen than they would have to spend for Darnay. They'd move up, you know. Imagine they're like, okay, third round pick for Matt Cullen, trade him off, and then it's like, we'll give you a fifth rounder for Darnay. That works for them. They just popped into my head. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. I was going down an alley that had no end, so it all works for me.
But yeah,
that's
my way of thinking.
So to move on from Darnay, I think a topic that we should end on is what's going on tonight. We have the U.S. versus Canada for Olympic gold.
Tom.
So, yes, Mikey.
Tom, how was your day? What did you do today?
It was a good day. It was a busy day working, but... So, Mike.
Did you have any thoughts of eating marbles?
Did you see any animals?
I can't say that I saw any animals, and I kind of have a sense that you're sort of trying to take this off the rails as I'm trying to land
no!
in the plane.
No rails, no rails, no rails.
And me and
but
Beth have been so good at staying
on
the rails.
I saw a horse the other day, Tom.
But I think
a
this is
life?
A topic that the three of you have a lot to say about, don't you?
That's true, Tom.
I'm terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought, to borrow a line from a fine film. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
past,
I've been,
I'm past speech.
Yeah, I've been,
I'm too frightened,
kind of like crackling with energy about this all day. Like I organized my sock drawer today. I've never done that before in my life.
No one's ever done that before in their life.
That I had a sock
I have.
Drawer. I didn't know that.
Mine get like very out of control. I have a lot of socks.
I like to tuck one sock into the other sock, and that way they stay together as a unit, ladies and gentlemen. I call that
What's it called?
Sock unit. One unit of sock.
I have it like if you overfill the drawer, it goes into the next.
My
sock drawer goes off the rails.
Hair.
Yeah, I've been this game to give folks some context. Team Canada has won 24 straight games of Olympic hockey. The last time they lost was 20 years ago, 1998 Nagano Games, when Team USA, led by Cammy Granato, defeated Canada. And USA, led by Hillary Knight, Brianna Decker, Kendall Coyne, Amanda Kessel, Megan Duggan, I could just name the whole roster, but I'll spare everyone. It's what's so fascinating about this is that USA has won the last three World Championships. They've won the last three Four Nations Cups, which is a tournament between USA, Canada, Sweden, and Finland. And so it's like, oh, this is USA's year. But in the preliminary stage, Canada beat USA 2-1 in a super-duper controversial game. That's my the official lingo I'm choosing to use as someone who tries to make a living with his words. Super-duper. There was two goals waved off. There was a missed penalty shot by Team USA. There's a controversial goal that was offsides, but Team USA's offside head coach, Rob Sauber, didn't challenge it. So there's enough storylines to keep you in. I mean, folks, none of the Rangers games for the rest of the season mean anything. I'm just saying. I don't mean to be that guy.
Good question for you, though, Mike. A very important question. You mentioned Cammy Granato, but you did not talk about her husband, Ray Ferraro. Why? I want to know about their husbands, their brothers, their uncles, cousins, great-grandparents. I want to know everything, except for their current team, what their role is, what they're good at. Just give me, like, as stupid a fact as you can.
Wow.
Be that guy from
I could
the New
tell
York
you,
Times.
I was a really big fan of Pierre LeBrun. Pierre Maguire saying, like, oh, that she grew up in this town, and you know, this is her brother and her great. He was talking about players' great grandfathers, for fuck's sake. It doesn't matter.
Like with Kendall Coyne, they are so quick with Kendall Coyne to be like, let's talk about her boyfriend. And the only piece of information from this entire tournament that I found useful that I was like, I'm actually interested in, was when they said that she makes him practice on the ice and he makes her practice on the field. Because that I go, that's really interesting that she trains on the football field as well. That you caught my attention. Otherwise, go away. Don't talk about that. That there was this story on the ice garden. They need that, like, imprinted into their brains.
Oh, yeah, the story that Jen wrote. Yeah, that was hysterical. It was just correcting all the goofy bullshit that Pierre Maguire just... My favorite is, not only is Kendall Coyne's fiancé a football boy, but he's super-duper tall and she's short, and that's something else. Like, that's what they're talking about when there's really intense hockey going on.
My takeaways of Maguire from the Olympics are he has insulted analytics so many times, and the way he's insulted it, it's like, that is exactly what they do, stop talking. And then everything about women, anything. And it's just like, why are you here? I know he knows so much stuff, and he really knows, like, all these details, and everyone gets mad because it's like, oh, you give out way too much information at inopportune times. But, like, did you not think to study up for this? Because I know of all people, he'd be the perfect one to learn all these interesting details about their lives and then spit them out. Even if it was at the wrong time, at least it would be like, okay, cool, he's teaching us something. But no.
Yeah.
I mean,
why do that for a
week? For me, the most hilarious thing last time was him, like, going, like, Brianna Decker for him, Pierre, last time went from being, like, one of the most impressive players on the team. Okay, thank you, yes, thank you, to one of the most impressive women's hockeys, to by the end he was stuttering and saying, oh, I actually think she's one of the most talented hockey players, male or female, you know, like his entire worldview had been changed. And it was like, you know, if you had maybe watched, like, 2 hours of tape before you did this game, we'd be spared you having these, you know, nice little revelations here. I mean, it's just the whole thing. Like, I just can't imagine how a woman, you know, broadcasting a men's game would be treated if she, like, stumbled in like that and was like, wow, who do we have here? You know, I mean, can you even imagine? But it's apparently fine for, you know, the chicks. So they're
Pierre
lucky anyone's watching it all, damn it. All right, guys,
I think...
really need to pee. So I got it, and I have people coming over. So I have to go.
Then go, then.
I love
Bye,
you,
Beth. Though.
It's very rude to leave a show early, Beth. Very rude.
You know, I texted you all that I had to go, and nobody listened to me or gave me an out, and then I had a thing to say, so now I have to go,
I was just making a joke
tomorrow.
Because I was 30 minutes late for the show. So. Don't worry. We love you very much.
I love you all.
And you let it be that girls were the majority on something for, like, something on Blue Shirt. That's big.
Yeah,
right.
A little bit of history.
Tom, did you feel intimidated and dominated?
Of course not.
Tom?
Oh, Tom, what are your
of course.
Like right now?
All right, goodbye.
What was
goodnight.
That, Mike?
Bye.
What are your estrogen levels like right now?
I don't quite know how to respond to that question.
Would you rather eat some marbles? Because we could do that too.
Do you
I
feel that
we'll
we boss you around a lot?
Oh no, I don't.
Feel,
I hope you don't. I don't feel bossed around.
Okay, then I guess we're not doing our job well enough.
I mean, if you want to be more bossy, you can be by all means. I mean, I'd say I'm pretty easygoing, and I'm just like, okay, that's fine.
Joe always tells me not to boss him around, and then he'll be like, actually, you can keep doing it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to anyway.
Joe doesn't know what's good for him.
Yeah.
So Mike, I think this would be a good time for you to read off
Go
the names
the
of all the wonderful people that help support this podcast through our Patreon.
Oh, yeah. I didn't forget about doing that at all, Tom. How dare you even suggest such a thing? So I'm going to read some names now. I'm not good at reading, but here we go. Obviously, this show is impossible without our wonderful patrons, and here are their names. Not all of these are their birth names, however. Some of these are very clearly nonsensical, but we'll read them through anyway. John J. Porter, Anthony Viola, John Reppy, Johnny Olo, Alex Gardner, Alexander Ricard, Robert Courtney, Meaty Ogre. Something tells me that Meaty Ogre's mother did not name him Meaty Ogre. Daniel DeGene,
you might be right.
Eric Cohn, Matt Bader, George Littman, Dan's Lynch, Danny Santiago, Gabriel Vargas, James Dangles. I hope that Dangles is his real last name. David L. Singer, Darwin Bushman, Grumpy Smokey. That sounds like an old bear, like an old grizzly bear. That's like the patriarch of the Yosemite National Forest. Grumpy Smokey. Scott Potash, Mike Offit, Chris B., Bob Kawa, Andrew Grigo? I like that name. Stink Fleeman, Toy from Manhattan, Arch Williams, Igor Zaslavsky, Zachary Zetlin, Dan Crozy, Alexander Thornton, Thomas Osa, Trevor Kepner, Michael Silvers, and I think that's all the names I'm supposed to read. That was a lot of names. Thank you all very much. Keeping,
good
you know,
job.
It's donations and support like yours that will get Tom to swallow a marble one day.
We would have to set sort of like a bar for that, sort of like Mike, or rather for Joe going to be eating the cap full of the shave gel. So we'll
listeners,
have to sort of
tweet
set
us
a bar.
Tweet us what you, if you want Tom to eat a marble, tweet us. All three of us, or just the Blue Shirt Banner official Twitter page, tweet us what it will take, what you think it should take for Tom to eat a marble, because we can't disappoint you guys. So tell us what you think, and we'll consider it, and we'll weigh our options, and then set something for Tom to eat a marble.
This can only end in tears. I love it. This is going to be the worst thing ever.
I just love how this is something that you both are going to weigh, and I feel like I have very little input in the situation, which...
Yeah, pretty much, Tom.
Yep.
I mean, that's a tough break, buddy, but it is what it is. I mean,
I think it would just be fun,
to see the horses that I saw the other day, so this is what happened.
You want to stay on the rails, this is what has to happen. And it was me and Beth together, and we stayed on the rails, which I remember you guys saying that would never happen.
I didn't say that.
Didn't you guys say, like, if it was me and Beth together, it would just be off the rails the whole time? Like, that was, like,
no.
Earlier in the year. Maybe Joe said it. If it was
probably,
Joe, I think we would have dragged them way off the rails.
He's a terrible friend and a terrible father.
Also, guys, when you let us know what you want, you know, how much you think it should take for Tom to eat a marble, let us know what color marble he should be eating, because I think that's an important question as well.
I'm just saying this, Shayna, from a strictly medical perspective and someone who cares very deeply about Tom's safety, I would suggest we get an opaque marble so that it shows up better in x-rays and CAT scans.
Anything but red. You don't want red.
Something goes horribly wrong. We do not want it like a... a translucent or transparent marble. That would be bad, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Want something that'll show up.
Mighty thoughtful of you, Mike.
You need a color that definitely should not be in his body normally. So maybe like lime green, purple, blue. Just not red. Red is out. Red is out. You can't have it.
Tom, did you know that the human eye detects green better than any other color?
I did not know that.
That's surprising. Especially considering colorblind. Like, so many people are colorblind for green.
It's really interesting, huh?
Hmm.
Tom, did you know that the average human foot has 5 toes on it?
Yes. I did. I have a question for you, Mike. Actually, I have two questions for you.
All right, what do you got?
So, number one, where can people find you on Twitter?
You son of a
bitch.
Back
on the rails.
Right. Your new name is The Conductor. Because you get us on the rails. At DigDeepBSB is where you can find me on the Twitter.
And where else can people read your work besides Blue Shirt Banter?
In the stars, Tom. They can read it in the stars. They can read it in the smiles of their children. And
they can read
they
it
can
in
feel
their
it.
Alphabet soup. Forms
they
words.
They can feel it when,
name.
When their lovers hold their hands and they walk through parks. That's where they can find my work.
Good answer.
Welcome
Shana,
to the wilderness, Tom. We're off the rails.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at HeyShay, 3 Y's and 3 Y's.
And where else can people find your work besides Blue Shirt Banter?
You can find my work at The Athletic.
In the stars.
And at Hockey Graphs. And I'll actually have something written for there very shortly because I finally finished what I was doing for like a century and a half. And also in the stars. Sometimes written in the sand, you know? Never know. Someone might see something I wrote and draw it out in the sand, you know? Crazier things have happened.
Tom, where can people find you in the world?
People can find me on Twitter at Tom Ertz Jr. And you can find my work on Blue Shirt Banter. That's it. Or
do you have
can
anything
also
exciting you're working on?
Yeah, Tom. What are you working on?
I am working on my mixed game score piece, which I have a feeling it's going to be another, you know, bleeding red of negative for, you know, shot differentials. And it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a bunch of different names that are gone and names that are joined, and it'll be all kinds of interesting.
And Mike, do you have anything interesting you're working on?
Shana, thank you so much for asking, but I'd like to add that you can also find Tom in your nearest hobby store in the marble aisle. But I am also working on a piece about Jean Rattel's number being retired soon, because that's coming up, and that's pretty exciting. I got to talk to Rangers legend Ron Gresh. Rangers legend Rob Gilbert about that, and Ron Greshner came up. But honestly, I had some marbles in my mouth there, Tom. You see what I did there?
It's very nice.
Well, on that note, I would like to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank you for supporting everything that we do, and we will speak to you all again soon. Take care, Shana. Take care, Mike.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye. You're supposed to end the show.